SER 3010, and that is United States of America versus Margarito Saucedo. Today is Mills and Hartzler Day in the United States Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit. And come on up, Mr. Sanford. Nice to see you. Nice to see all of you. We'd have no jobs if it weren't for you. We're so happy to see you. Okay.
May it please the court, Gregory Sanford on behalf of defendant appellant Margarito Saucedo. Your Honors, the question before this court is whether a reasonable person would understand a suspect who tells an officer, yes, you can search my vehicle, to actually mean, go ahead and take my car apart. The answer is that a reasonable person wouldn't understand such a consent in that way.
Well, of course, there's no claim here that there was any damage done to the truck or the interior by unscrewing a screw and pulling back the molding, is there?
It depends, Your Honor, on your definition of damage. Under the government's definition of damage, essentially, there would be no limit in terms of what the police could do without damaging a vehicle. But certainly, a skilled mechanic could reassemble an entire vehicle.
Well, I guess that would carry a lot more weight here if they'd gotten really deep into the vehicle and, you know, strewn parts all over the place to get to the drugs. But here, it's just a panel with a screw that's, when you pull that apart, it's right there.
Your Honor, the officer removed a compartment which had been installed in the vehicle and was integral to the vehicle using tools. In doing so, he exceeded what a reasonable person would have understood a general consent to search to be.
It was integral to the concealment compartment. It was the trap. It was integral only to the storage of drugs. It had no other function for that vehicle.
It did not, but ultimately neither does the door panel in Garcia. The door panel does not necessarily keep the door closed. It's a part of the vehicle, in part decorative, in part it has some function. But like this, it is the disassembly of a part, and it's invasive, as the court in Garcia described it, inherently invasive.
So we can never unscrew anything in any car. See, what I'm trying to figure out is why isn't it objectively reasonable to remove a screw or two? You know, if a compartment looks deeper than it should be, and the driver confesses that he's transported drugs in the past.
Your Honor, once the officer uses a tool to alter part of the vehicle, especially in a way that's not intended to be performed with the five senses, they have exceeded the scope of consent.
So the request for consent, sort of like a Miranda warning, must be like this. May I search your car, and in doing so, I may use a screw, I may use a pliers, I may use a flashlight, and so forth. You have to list the particulars of the tools that may be in play?
Your Honor, I would not say that the officer would have to list the tools that are in play. However, the officer does need to go beyond simply asking to search, because a reasonable person would understand a search not to include tools.
So the officer has to say, may I search your car and any secret compartments therein?
The officer could use a number of different ways of putting it.
Nothing in Jimeno requires that.
No, that's true. But Jimeno was dealing with a slightly different situation in that the officer was searching a paper bag found on the floor of the vehicle, as opposed to a part of the vehicle which has been attached as integral, requires the use of tools and disassembly prior to searching it.
But the request was to search the vehicle, not to search the bag in the vehicle, mm-hmm. and the consent covered that.
That's true, but the ultimate, but again, it's about what the reasonable expectations, as the Supreme Court said in Jimeno, are from hearing the interaction between the suspect and the officer. And given that there was nothing, that it was simply a request to search, the reasonable person would understand that did not include disassembly of.
So now, are you suggesting that a police officer, for instance, can't search a car with a flashlight after gaining consent?
Your Honor, no, I'm not suggesting that the use of a flashlight alone would be prohibited under the rule that Mr. Saucedo is suggesting here. That specifically to the extent that the tool is being used in a way that that the officer could not do in the five senses with the five senses alone, then it becomes, I would suggest.
Well, one of the five senses, unless he's from Mars, is not a flashlight. It's not a body.
Well, no, but it extends to the extent it extends the officer's visual capability. It's not actively changing what the officer the five senses, in the same way that a screwdriver and then used in concert with the flashlight is in this case, which allows the disassembly of a screw.
So in other words, if an officer had a dragon lady nail and used the nail to unscrew the screw, that would be okay?
I think that's a more difficult question. I think ultimately that would still fall under Garcia's inherently invasive prohibition against inherently invasive searches as beyond the consent given in a general consent. But ultimately, this case comes back to the use of a screwdriver, which, you know, is a tool. There's no question there. And if an officer were to be able to use their fingernail, that could be addressed in that case.
Speaking of the functionality of that compartment, I have a recollection that the officer looked at that area and said that's not the way these trucks are, and that sort of tipped him off that something was there.
I believe that was the officer's testimony.
So he knew what the ordinary functional aspects of that area of the truck would be, and this stood out to him as different.
It did, and yet it was a custom installation. It was, by being installed in the way that it was, it remained integral to the vehicle. And of course, the officer did have other options. He had a drug dog on the way who would be able to sniff the truck to see if it could contain drug.
So don't you fall into the trap of inevitability there? If the dog's on the way and
Your Honor,
there's a lot of cocaine there?
I would be more concerned about inevitable discovery had the government raised it below. This court has repeatedly held, including in the United States against Ali, that arguments not raised at the district court are waived. The government never mentioned inevitable discovery. They never presented evidence specifically for purposes of showing inevitable discovery. There's simply nothing in the record on which to that should suggest that the argument should not have been waived.
Well, the evidence is there, though, that the dog was on the way.
The evidence is there that the dog was on the way, but there is no evidence that the dog would have alerted had the officer not removed the compartment and removed the drugs from the compartment prior to the dog's arrival.
So the dog would come and watch television? What was the dog going to do?
Well, the dog could certainly search, but there's no evidence the dog would have alerted. I mean, the government itself
cites... If that dog didn't alert to 10 kilograms of cocaine, they better get another dog.
Well, Your Honor, the government actually cites a case in which the dog showed up before the secret compartment was searched, checked the vehicle, and didn't alert. That was the United States against Ferrer Montoya case from the Eighth Circuit. There certainly is
St. Louis dogs.
There certainly is no evidence in the record that shows that absent removal of the drugs from the compartment, the dog would have alerted. So I don't believe that the government has carried its burden, even if it hadn't waived the inevitable discovery argument by not raising it. Your Honors, ultimately, Mr. Saucedo's point is that a reasonable person would not have understood his consent to include permission to disassemble part of his truck. And because Trooper Miller did so, even though he had other options, even though that truck was not leaving because it's his license and the registration on the truck were expired, that the dog was on its way, that he nonetheless chose to press ahead without exploring another valid means of getting authorization to search, he violated Mr. Saucedo's Fourth Amendment rights. And based on that, the ruling of the magistrate judge in the district court that denied the suppression motion should be reversed. I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you. Hi, Mr. Hartzberg.
Good morning again.
Does it really all come down to damage, do you think?
I think the case law supports that, yeah.
So suppose police departments become...
Can I interrupt myself? Or
yeah.
You? Can I interrupt you?
Yeah.
I don't think it comes down exclusively to damage. I mean, the disassembling of the car, for example, I think that the scope of the search would exceed what reasonable people would expect. There'd also be a problem with the time. Now, this rock, of course, was essentially on the sidelines. I mean, unless someone came to drive it away. So the time of the scope within terms of time probably wouldn't have been problematic. But I don't want to leave you with the impression that I think damage would be the exclusive rule of law, that you could say, well, if there's no damage, they can do what they want. They can disassemble the automobile or the truck or something of that sort. So I interrupted you. I apologize for that. Let's go back.
No, but you helped me. Because, you know, so the limit, I guess, you would say is objective reasonableness.
That is for sure. That's what I would say the standard is, yes.
So where's the line? In other words, you can unscrew the speakers and door panels, but not the cushions, the headrest, the tires, spare tires, but not the attached tires. How does an officer know what amount of dismantling is reasonable in any particular case? I mean, can he go so far and say, gosh, I better stop dismantling? I'm just wondering. It's academic.
I think it's probably a product of the time, the effort, the nature of the tools. I mean, as the panel has indicated, this was just a screwdriver. It wasn't even...
A sledgehammer, no.
Well, a sledgehammer, no. I mean, a sledgehammer would be difficult to use without causing some damage. So let's put damage. Anything that would cause damage, of course, crosses the line. That's a fairly easy one to draw. But short of damage, I understand what your concern is. And what could they do short of damage? I mean, it's a very good question. But this, I think if you watch the video, you'll see that this didn't really take much time. I mean, he went into the cab of that truck after coming out of the trailer and reasonably quickly figured out what was going on, as Judge Tinder noted. I think you can actually tell from the photographs, you can see that there's a false back to that little compartment. So this was an experienced trooper that understood Peterbilt trucks and went right to it.
It was a fairly obvious hidden compartment in that respect.
I think so, yeah. Well, I didn't know when I first looked at the photos, but when you look at the photos and you see the depth of the bed area and appreciate that apparently that compartment extends farther back, there would be no reason to have the back of the compartment where it was in this circumstance. So they've obviously done something, according to the testimony of the trooper, to create the false compartment. Well hidden, but you know, he had other reasons to suspect there were drugs. I wanted to mention that. I know that you're about to ask me a question, but I wanted to mention it's not just a question of the defendant saying yes to may I search. It's yes to may I search your truck for drugs. So it's item specific. The issue is, well, would a typical person think it's objectively reasonable to search inside a hidden compartment for drugs?
Right. It depends on the purpose of the search.
Correct, yes.
And that was known to everybody. Implicitly includes hidden compartments in which drugs might be stashed.
That's fair.
But what about not-so-obvious hidden compartments? We've got this unpublished order in the Calvo-Saucedo case where it was a rocker panel on a side door. Not so obvious, but that's where the drugs were, and we said that was okay. I don't know if you're familiar with that case.
No, I'm familiar. Yeah, there are a number of cases where there's been removal of screws or pulling back the molding, things of that sort. Very, very minor intrusion into the chassis, the vehicle. I didn't really understand.
I don't know if the rule is that the scope of consent is limited to those places that might obviously hold the contraband that's being sought, or even perhaps those that are less obvious? You know, how far does this line go?
Right. That's what we're struggling with here. I understand the question. I don't know. I mean, I don't know how difficult it would be to, let's say, remove the headliner, which is an area where drugs are sometimes found. Usually after a dog alerts, they'll remove the headliner. Or the spare tire is another example. I mean, it's often in, I shouldn't say often, but the inside the spare tire, and they have to dismantle the whole spare tire. So I mean, I don't know exactly if you feel the obligation to draw the line for law enforcement using this case. I'm reluctant to suggest that we need to draw the line beyond objective reasonableness. I think there's an awful lot of case law and a lot of case examples where this sort of thing has occurred. And I don't know that you need to draw it. In fact, if we can move on to another subject, you notice when we get into this whole question of opportunity to withdraw consent, really this is a kind of a clever way to ask this court to overlay a due process clause concern onto the Fourth Amendment. There's no case law that supports that, and I would urge you not to follow that path. But I thought, you know, it was an interesting idea for opposing counsel to come up with the concept that you have to allow the presence of the suspect and provide the suspect with an opportunity to object or to say, I withdraw my consent. I wanted to mention that the Eighth Circuit case, United States versus Mayo, involves that very issue. And the question is, well, the appellant says, I had no opportunity to withdraw my consent, and the Eighth Circuit affirmed that. Can I jump to the very tail end of the argument on this waiver issue?
You can do
anything. I just want to address this because it's a little frustrating. There's no waiver for the prevailing party to raise an issue it didn't raise below that's supported by the record. The Alley case is a government appeal. The evidence in that case was suppressed, and the government appealed. They were the losing party. The losing party waives arguments that it hasn't raised below to reverse a judgment the district court. Makes perfect sense. Wasn't presented to the district court, wasn't analyzed in the district court. But for the prevailing party to come before this court and say, also the record supports inevitable discovery, there's nothing improper about the case law. That's black letter law.
And what does the record show about whether the dog would have hit on these drugs if they hadn't been removed from the compartment?
There is no evidence. There's no testimony about whether the dog would have hit or not. But bear in mind, the drugs were, I don't think, were they yet removed from their compartment? I think the compartment was removed. The drugs were still in the compartment. The compartment is a little larger than a bread box. I think the drugs were essentially still in the bread box. I don't think they'd taken the drugs out. I beg your pardon if I'm not accurate with the record. But I thought that the drugs were still there. They'd removed the compartment, and they set the compartment there on the bed when the dog went around. And then it's a DEA agent arrives and removes the drug from the cab of the truck.
The dog hit on the truck when it arrived.
The dog hit on the truck, went around the truck, hit on the truck. We don't know which side it hit on. But the drugs were still in the cab of the truck. The compartment was still in the cab of the truck. And if you'll check the record to confirm, I'd appreciate it. I think the compartment was removed with the drugs in them.
Well, the truck was going to be impounded as well, I assume, because it could not be driven.
Well, no, it could have been driven if they brought a driver. They brought a licensed driver.
It couldn't be driven by this defendant.
This defendant could not drive that truck.
I thought the truck's registration had expired, though.
Right, but they would have ticketed that. And I think they would have let the truck go had there been a legitimate driver. They would have ticketed it, I believe is correct. Okay, I have a minute to go. I think I've addressed everything I wanted to. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Sanford, how much time? 1 minute. If you need two, you can take two.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Lady Bountiful.
To address Mr. Hartzler's final point about whether or not the drugs were removed from the compartment prior to the dog search, the trooper at the suppression hearing testified that they were, and that's found on pages 28 and 29 of the suppression hearing transcript. As to the Calvo Saucedo case, the defendant in that case had the opportunity to observe the search, and his observation of that search was deemed, in the opinion, to essentially be an acquiescence that the search was not outside the bounds of his consent. In this case, because Mr. Saucedo was in the officers' cars during the course of the search, behind the cab and the trailer, he couldn't observe the search, and certainly his lack of objection couldn't...
That decision didn't say that's a necessary condition.
It did not, but it was something that the court found actually had occurred during that search. The court found that he had observed the search.
Right. You're asking for a rule that that must be... that opportunity must be accorded, and that would be an extraordinary rule for us to fashion.
Mr. Saucedo is asking for a rule not that all suspects must observe all searches, rather that if the bounds of the consent are going to be deemed to be greater than the five senses, that the suspect at least has to be present. While I would suggest that it's not fair to infer that, courts have inferred that, and where the defendant is not present, it can't be inferred that the defendant has acquiesced to a search beyond the five senses without actually being present or without being specifically asked for consent to exceed the five senses. The one other point was that was the issue of the fact that the officer mentioned drugs in asking for consent to search. Again, while that's understandably would defines the scope of the search, the officer still, a reasonable person would not infer from that that the officer is going to begin to disassemble part of the vehicle in looking for drugs. Ultimately, drugs could be hidden anywhere, and if the mention of drugs would allow significant disassembly of the vehicle, that certainly wouldn't be reasonable in light of the request made by the officer. With that, we would request that you reverse the ruling of the district court.
And with that, you and your law firm, Kirkland & Ellis, will have the thanks, the deep thanks of the court for taking on this interesting case. And the case will be taken under advisement.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.